Luke chapter 24, verses 13 through 35. That same day, two of Jesus' followers were walking to the village of Emmaus, 7 miles from Jerusalem. As they walked along, they were talking about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things, Jesus himself suddenly came and began walking with them, but God kept them from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing so intently as you walk along?" They stopped short, sadness written across their faces. Then one of them, named Cleopas, replied, "You must be the only person in Jerusalem who hasn't heard about all the things that have happened there in the last few days." "What things?" Jesus asked. "The things that happened to Jesus, the man from Nazareth," they said. "He was a prophet who did powerful miracles, and he was a mighty teacher in the eyes of God and all the people. But our leading priests and other religious leaders handed him over to be condemned to death, and they crucified him. We had hoped that he was the Messiah who had come to rescue Israel. This all happened 3 days ago." Then some of the women from our group of his followers were at his tomb earlier this morning, and they came back with an amazing report. They said his body was missing, and they had seen angels who told them that Jesus is alive. Some of our men ran out to see, and sure enough, his body was gone, just as the women had said. Then Jesus said to them, "You foolish people, you find it so hard to believe that all that the prophets wrote in the scriptures. Wasn't it clearly predicted that the Messiah would have to suffer all these things before entering his glory?" Then Jesus took them through the writings of Moses and all the prophets, explaining from all the scriptures the things concerning himself. By this time they were nearing Emmaus and the end of their journey. Jesus acted as if he were going on, but they begged him, "Stay the night with us, since it's getting late." So he went home with them. As they sat down to eat, he took the bread and blessed it. Then he broke it and gave it to them. Suddenly their eyes were opened and they recognized him. And at that moment, he disappeared. They said to each other, "Didn't our hearts burn within us as he talked with us on the road and explained the scriptures to us?" And within the hour, they were on their way back to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 disciples and the others who were gathered with them, who said, "The Lord has really risen. He's appeared to Peter." Then the two from Emmaus told their story of how Jesus had appeared to them as they were walking along the road, and how they had recognized him as he was breaking the bread. A few months ago, I was out with my family, and as we were walking around the store, I felt something on my leg. And I looked down on my leg, and a child, who was not my own child, was giving my leg a hug. And as I looked down, that child looked up at me and realized that the person that they were hugging was not their mom or dad. Now, I want you, maybe this is something you've experienced as a child growing up. I want you to put yourself in that child's shoes and imagine what they might have been feeling. Scared, embarrassed, nervous, sad, confused, all these things I could see in the face of this child as they realized that they were hugging a stranger. Now, imagine you're that child and you've realized that you're hugging someone you don't know, and then you look back up at this person and you realize that, in fact, this person is your mom or your dad. You just weren't able to recognize them for a moment. So you were scared and confused and disoriented, but now how do you feel? Happy, right? Relieved. Safe. Secure. For a moment, everything seemed scary and confusing, but now you feel secure, like everything is the way it should be. This child felt like they were lost and unsafe, but in reality, they were exactly where they needed to be, right next to their parents. It's a good feeling, right? I think this is a lot like how these two disciples of Jesus felt in the story we just read. As they walked along the road to Emmaus, they were sad, disappointed, confused, scared, lost. Everything that they had thought was true about Jesus turned out to be wrong, and their world didn't feel safe anymore. Then, in a moment, everything changes. They encounter the resurrected Jesus, and their eyes saw the world in a whole new way. Well, on Easter Sunday, we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus. And this story teaches us that resurrection changes everything. The way we see the world, the way we see our lives, the way we see our community is radically changed when we come face to face with the resurrected Jesus. So we're going to dive into this story in Luke chapter 24 and just take it verse by verse and try to unpack how we can understand these two disciples and their experience walking along that road to Emmaus. So on that same day, the day that Jesus rose from the dead, this is the first Easter Sunday, two of his followers were walking from Jerusalem, which is where Jesus was crucified, to a town called Emmaus. Now, we need to remember that name Emmaus because we're going to come back to it, and it's important to what's going on in this story. As they walked along towards Emmaus, they were talking about everything that had happened, when suddenly Jesus shows up, walking next to them. But there's an unexpected twist in the story at this moment, something that should surprise us, and that is that the disciples don't recognize Jesus. They can physically see him. We know this because they have a conversation with him, but they don't know it's Jesus. So they can see with their eyes, but they can't see with their minds. They're not able to perceive the reality that is before them. And the glaring question for us readers is why? Why can't they see who this is? So Jesus, as he walks with them, asks them, "What are you guys talking about?" The disciples stop short, sadness written across their faces, and then one of them, named Cleopas, replies, "You must be the only person in Jerusalem who hasn't heard about all the things that have happened." Jesus says, "What things?" Now, of course, Jesus knows exactly what they're talking about, and he knows exactly what has happened. Yet he's trying to draw something out of them. He's trying to uncover what might be blinding them to the truth. And they respond, "The things that happened to Jesus, the man from Nazareth," they said. "He was a prophet who did powerful miracles, and he was a mighty teacher in the eyes of God and all the people. But our leading priests and other religious leaders, they killed him. They had him crucified." And you can tell that this is not what these two disciples had expected to happen when Jesus showed up in Jerusalem. And then we get some insight as to what might be blinding them. In verse 21, they say, "We had hoped he was the Messiah who had come to rescue Israel." Now, if you hope for something and that thing turns out to not be true or not come to be, what's the feeling that you experience in that moment? Disappointment, right? Disappointment. So some translations have the word redeem in this verse. "We had hoped that he had come to redeem Israel." So what does this tell us? It tells us that whatever they believed that Jesus was going to do, in their minds, could not possibly involve him getting crucified. They thought that Jesus might be the Messiah, the Savior promised by the prophets to redeem God's people, but the crucifixion made it clear that they thought wrong. For them, the crucifixion was a complete shock and an utter failure, and it shattered all of their hopes. Like that child who embraces the leg of their parent only to look up and find out it's a stranger. They are confused, disoriented, afraid, and lost. Jesus was not who they thought he was. So what was it that they expected Jesus to do? Well, this word redeem is key to understanding their expectations. It is a word that points us back to Israel's origin story. The first time that this word appears in the Bible is in the book of Exodus, chapter 6. Now, in the book of Exodus, Israel, God's people, are in slavery in Egypt. And in Exodus chapter 6, God is speaking with Moses. And just listen to what he says. He says, "I have heard the groans of the people of Israel, who are now slaves to the Egyptians, and I am well aware of my covenant with them. Therefore, say to the people of Israel, I am the Lord. I will free you from your oppression. I will rescue you from your slavery in Egypt. I will redeem you with a powerful arm and great acts of judgment. And I will claim you as my own people. I will be your God. Then you will know that I am the Lord your God who has freed you from your oppression in Egypt." So the first time that redemption appears in the Bible, it is in a story about how God freed Israel from slavery and oppression in order to be in relationship with him. And this is not the only time that redemption occurs in the Bible. All throughout the biblical story, to redeem always means to bring someone out of slavery or oppression and into relationship with God. This is the biblical definition of redemption. Now, at the time of this story in Luke chapter 24, is Israel a free nation? No, they're not. They're under the oppressive rule of the Roman Empire. They deal with constant military presence, especially in the temple where they worship God. They deal with laws that restrict their way of life. They deal with devastating taxes, particularly on the poor in their community. And now the Romans have just crucified a popular leader in Jesus. So put yourself in these two disciples' shoes. They had grown up their whole lives under Roman oppression. They leave everything they have to follow Jesus, this man who claims to be the Redeemer. They didn't make this up. Jesus said he had come to redeem. What would you be expecting Jesus to do? Overthrow the Romans. You can see how, with that expectation, the crucifixion seems like an utter defeat. Messiahs don't get crucified. They conquer, they overpower and defeat the enemy. So for these two disciples, their expectations do not match up with their reality. And they are, as a result, they are disoriented, disappointed, and afraid. Their future seems uncertain and unsafe. So how does Jesus respond to these two disciples? He says, "You fools, why is it so hard for you to believe what the prophets wrote about in the scriptures? Wasn't it clearly predicted that the Messiah would have to suffer all these things before entering his glory?" Then Jesus took them through the writings of Moses and all the prophets, explaining all the scriptures that talked about him. Now, Luke doesn't include the details of what Jesus explained to them, but we can make some assumptions. Jesus explained to them how the whole story of the Bible points to him and to this moment, not only his crucifixion, but his resurrection. He explained that this shouldn't be a surprise to them. This is what God has been moving towards all along. And he explains to them, possibly most importantly, that what he came to do was so much bigger than redeeming Israel from Rome. It includes that, but it's bigger than that. Because think about it, what would happen if Jesus was what they hoped he was? What would happen if Jesus had freed Israel from Roman oppression? Well, look at the last 1,200 years of Israel's history. From the Exodus to Jesus, if their history is any indication of their future, they would soon enough fall under the oppression of the next global superpower. In fact, just 150 years earlier, there was a redeemer who overthrew an oppressive power. His name was Judas Maccabee, and Judas Maccabee, he defeated the Greek Empire, who was oppressing the Jewish people, and ironically, the most famous battle for Jewish independence was fought in the very town that these two disciples were headed to, Emmaus. So these disciples came from Emmaus, and they followed Jesus throughout these years. And now that Jesus has been crucified, they're going back to Emmaus. It's quite symbolic the picture that Luke is painting here about these two disciples and their thinking about who Jesus is or who he should be in their minds. So why did Luke include this? There's a lot of pieces of details in this story that Luke didn't include, but he said Emmaus multiple times in the story. He includes this bit of information to say that the Romans were not the first to oppress the Israelite people, and they won't be the last. They will always have enemies. They will always have people who are against them, and when they don't, when they are the ones in power, they oppress themselves. The rich oppress the poor. The men oppress the women. The high-status religious people oppress the low-status lay people. In other words, the real underlying problem would not be fixed by simply overthrowing the Roman Empire. In other words, Luke is saying, we have seen this movie before, and Jesus' plan for redemption is much, much bigger than that. And this isn't just Israel. This is the human condition. Israel's story is a microcosm, a small glimpse of the story of creation. We are all oppressed by this never-ending cycle of sin and evil that we do to one another. And like these two disciples, we often miss the forest for the trees. We want our issues fixed. We want Jesus to deal with what we can see right in front of us at that moment. But we are blind to the bigger work of redemption that he wants to do. And this doesn't mean that those problems aren't significant or that Jesus doesn't care about them. Freedom from Roman oppression is a big deal, and Jesus knows it. He was just killed by the Romans. He understands the pain and the fear that they experience. But he also knows that his ultimate goal, the redemption of the world and all of humanity, cannot be solved case by case. He knows that treating the symptoms won't eliminate the disease. And Jesus has come to eliminate the disease. Jesus also knows that our way of dealing with the evil in the world often tends to only perpetuate the evil. I mean, think about it. What is the disciples' solution for being conquered by the Romans? A Messiah who will conquer the Romans. What's their solution to military occupation? Military revolution. The human response to evil often contributes to the cycle of evil. We return anger for anger, insult for insult, violence for violence. Retaliation is in our nature. But in Jesus' upside-down kingdom, anger is not defeated by more anger. It is defeated by love. Violence is not defeated by more violence. It is defeated by forgiveness. Death is not defeated by causing more death. It is defeated by Jesus' willing submission to it. This is inconceivable for these two disciples. It seems so backwards and so unrealistic. And they'd be right about that if it weren't for the resurrection. None of this makes sense without the resurrection. This whole way of living that Jesus both teaches and exemplifies is complete nonsense if it weren't for the resurrection. So Jesus explains all of this to his disciples, and do they get it? No. They still don't understand. They still can't see. Notice that their problem is not a lack of head knowledge. It's not a lack of information. This is what Jesus has been going on and on about leading up to his crucifixion. So they're not gaining any new information in this moment. Yet they are still blind to the reality that is before them. They still can't see that this is the risen Jesus walking and talking with them. It's going to take something else to open their eyes. So as they approach Emmaus in verse 28, Jesus acts as if he were going on, but they beg him to stay with them. And that night, as they sit down to eat together, Jesus takes the bread and he breaks it, he blesses it, and he gives it to his disciples. Now, if you're familiar with the gospel story, the last time that this happens was the last time he was with them. On the night that Jesus was arrested, he shares a Passover meal with his disciples. The Passover is a annual celebration that commemorates the story of Israel and how they came out of slavery and oppression in Egypt. So Jesus takes this sacred symbol of Israel's story and he redefines it to be a sacred symbol for this new community. Jesus gives the bread and the wine to his followers as a sacrament, this holy and sacred symbol, so that they could both commemorate and internalize the story of his life, death, and resurrection. And like the Passover meal, this practice that many of us call communion is not intended to simply remind us of the past. It's not just supposed to remind us of what Jesus has done, but it is intended to invite us into the future, to unite us with Jesus and with one another around the resurrecting work that he has done, is doing, and is still yet to do. So how amazing is this? I mean, communion, this Lord's Supper that we observe together is so much bigger than a little dry wafer and a plastic cup of juice. This is an embodiment of the story of Jesus. And it is in this moment, this first communion after the resurrection, that these disciples' eyes are opened and they recognize him. This is powerful. There's no amount of information or explanation that could give them the ability to see. They needed to encounter and internalize the amazing story that Jesus was inviting them to be a part of. And that happened as they engaged in this sacred practice of communion. So there is so much that we could say about this rich and mysterious story, and we can't even begin to scratch the surface, but I do want to leave you with this. I think we have to realize and come to grips with the fact that we can walk with Jesus We can see the things that he has done. We can hear his voice and his teachings and still not see him, still not understand who he truly is. And no amount of information will give us the eyes to see. Without coming face to face with the resurrection, Jesus could be walking right next to us and we wouldn't even recognize him. When our reality is shaped by our limited view of life and of the world, when our reality is shaped by our preloaded expectations for Jesus and what we think he should or shouldn't do, more than it is shaped by the resurrection, we, like these disciples, completely miss what's taking place right in front of us. We look at the mess and the uncertainty of our lives and of this world, and we say, "Where is Jesus?" Our expectations don't match with our reality, and as a result, we feel confused, afraid, and lost. We forget that the work of resurrection by nature is messy. It requires death before we can enter into life. And when things are messy and hard, when we are facing overwhelming confusion and disappointment and fear, if we can't take hope in the promise of resurrection, what else can we place our hope in? And the only way of doing this, according to Jesus, is to daily come face to face with his resurrection. Without his resurrection, this whole thing is a sham. It's meaningless, and we have every right to feel disoriented, afraid, and lost. But if the Easter story is true, if Jesus truly rose from the dead, then everything else makes sense. There is no one he can't redeem. There is nothing he can't make right. There is no death that he can't overcome, no dark night that won't be followed by the morning sun. If the resurrection is true, there is no part of our lives, no part of this world that won't be made new. So on this Easter morning, we are going to do what we do every time we gather together. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate the resurrection than to come to the table together, to take the bread and the cup. And when we do this, we're not just remembering what Jesus has done, but we are declaring our confident hope in what he is going to do. We are declaring our part in this amazing story that God is writing. The resurrection is not a one-time thing that happened 2,000 years ago that we celebrate and think about just one day out of the year. The resurrection is what Jesus is doing every moment of every day. And the most shocking thing about all of this is that he invites us to be a part of it. So I pray for you as you're listening to this in this Easter season that you are not only reminded of the resurrection, but you are drawn into the resurrected life that Jesus invites us to. That we can live each day, every moment of every day, in light of the resurrection. And that we can see this world and our lives and our neighbor and our community through the lens of our risen Savior. Have a wonderful Easter.